All right. Well, if you've bet Mark Andrews or Joe Burrow props over tonight and you think you deserve a refund, this isn't the show for you. But if you think you deserve the opportunity to maximize value across the rest of the NFL Week 11 board, you've come to the right place. So we'll do what we can on that front as we wish Andrews and Burrow the best. Here with us to break down Week 11 across the NFL is Sharp Clark. You can find his work all over the NFL betting content landscape at 4for4 with the Move the Line podcast and some written work he does there alongside some really sharp bettors. The Forward Progress show on Tuesdays with G-Stack George Sofides doing some film review. His own website, sharpclark.com. Of course, on the platform formerly known as Twitter, you can follow him if you're not doing so already, at Sharp Clark NFL. There's an E at the end of Clark. Clark, great to see you again. Welcome back to Props and Hops.
Thanks, Matt. I was really excited about this. I have a pretty busy schedule at this point, but when you asked me to come on, I had to say yes, because this is something I like to prioritize. I love the way that you talk about football and beyond football as well. So
thank you. I always appreciate the chance to get you on and understanding your schedule. I pick my spots, but this seemed like a right time to give it a go. So we will get to it. A quick note off the top for those of you watching us live on YouTube and Twitter, feel free to weigh in the chat with any questions or comments, and we'll look to work that into the show when possible. And Clark, first and foremost, I know that so far this season, a lot of tough sledding of late with your bets. You had a very well-worded post on Twitter on Tuesday addressing a brutal first half of the season. And for those who haven't seen it yet, what would be some of your top points that you'd like to get across from that post that you shared?
Sure. I think I'm losing on the year. You know, it's week 10. Hopefully you hope that if you start out slow, you kind of recover by week 10. And that hasn't been the case for me. And I think that I've been learning a lot about, you know, when you're playing a game with razor thin margins, like betting on NFL spreads and totals, even a winning bettor will have stretches that are losing because of math. But there's a difference between knowing that, you know, a 55% bettor will lose six bets in a row, you know, X percentage of the time. There's a difference between knowing that and then having it happen and having to process it with your actual bankroll. And so that's kind of what I've been going through this season is my longest bad stretch of my betting, you know, short betting life. I've only been betting seriously for 4 years, but it's still my longest tough stretch. And the other thing that it's taught me is, you know, my model is really focused on NFL spreads holistically, and that's been my singular focus for the last 4 years. And it's something that I'm going to continue to work on because that's my ultimate goal. But I think there are ancillary markets that I can attack, use like building out models from my original concept and attacking things like, you know, halves and quarters and, you know, team totals and live betting and player props and things like that that I don't currently have an actual model for that I'm going to spend next offseason building models for and expanding my surface area of attack so that I'm not solely relying on those super thin margin bets.
As I hear you say that, I think immediately back to reading The Logic of Sports Betting by Ed Miller and Matthew Davidow. And one of the top takeaways I had was looking to exploit surface area. NFL full game spreads, one of the most efficient betting markets in all of sports gambling. And to your point, a lot of the notions that you can come up with as an originator like you are might translate into other less efficient markets as well. But when it comes to the tough luck on side so far this season, I guess first off, I'd like to say welcome to the party. Sides have been killing me this season as well. Regular listeners keeping track could pretty easily tally up that I am 2-8 on sides on this show so far this season. Thank goodness for other bet types. But Clark, beyond that, I've got to note that your transparency is such a breath of fresh air. And I also think that half a season is quite a small sample size, and it can be really challenging to differentiate the signal from the noise. So with what you've experienced so far this season, how much adjusting have you done to your process versus sticking with the process that you had coming into the season?
So I'm not adjusting my process in the middle of the season. I'm sticking to it. I believe that what I'm doing works, and I have a lot of evidence of that. But I'm a little more sensitive, I think, to market resistance than I have been in the past. And so if there's a game where maybe my model likes the line, you know, the market is showing a different signal and I can't understand exactly where that market resistance is coming from, I can't articulate the counter argument, I'm more likely to either lay off or reduce my stake size on that bet because I'm feeling less confident in the things that differentiate my model from the market than I have been in previous seasons. So not changing my process, not changing my system, but, you know, adjusting my bet size a little bit in certain positions. But ultimately, like, you know, early week betting, I'm still being very aggressive. I've lost a lot of really good CLV bets this year. And so I think just continuing to make those bets that end up in CLV, I really aggressively targeted Bears plus 10.5, plus 11 earlier this week. And now, you know, that's looking like a good bet. It doesn't mean it's going to win, but if you make those bets in the long run, you're going to end up winning. So I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing.
So I'm guessing if we were having this conversation a few days ago, that Bears number you discussed would be your favorite bet on the board. But as we record this conversation on Thursday evening, if we want to transition into talking some sides on the NFL Week 11 slate, Clark, what would you identify as your current favorite spread on the board?
Probably, this is actually a tough week for spreads, but probably currently Packers plus 3 plus 100. You can get that at Bookmaker. If you don't have access to Bookmaker and you're only seeing plus 3 minus 110, I would say wait, because it's much more likely to get back up to kind of a cheaper 3 or maybe even touch 3.5 again than it is to go down. The reason I like this bet is because my numbers make this about 1.5. I think the Chargers offense has not been good this year since they lost Mike Williams and Corey Linsley. It's been a big sample size now. And I think a lot of people saw the game against Detroit and say, well, you know, the Chargers offense is back. They put up 38 points. They scored touchdowns on, you know, 4 or 5 consecutive drives, whatever it was. But I wasn't as impressed from watching the tape. I think that they relied on a lot of low percentage third down conversions. And in the red zone, they really struggled. There was one series where it took them 8 plays to get in the end zone from the 5. And the first play was down to the 1. So it was 7 plays from the 1, a penalty on 4th down and then a conversion on the next 4th down against the Lions. And that's just not that impressive to me. And I think they're likely to struggle a little bit against this Packers defense in Lambeau, especially if Jair Alexander plays, and especially if Keenan Allen is not 100%. And then on the other side, I'm really enjoying watching the Packers grow slowly. I've been betting against them consistently this year, but I'm starting to see a bunch of young receivers and tight end start to understand their roles better. I'm starting to see the plays develop. The offensive line is giving Jordan Love so much time. And so these downfield routes that are splitting the safeties and creating space downfield are starting to work. And when they work against a defense like the Steelers, I think they can work against the Steelers like the Chargers, or defense like the Chargers that gives up a lot of explosive plays. So this is a 2-way handicap for me, playing the home team, getting points in what probably will be a close game.
I hear you on that. And I also think back to somebody else whom I highly respect, Fabian Sommer, who goes by Suma in gambling Twitter circles. His best bet on forward progress this week was the Chargers laying the points. So that gives me a lot of deliberating to do before I decide whether or not to pull the trigger one way or another. And Clark, I don't think that my selection this week for a side will immediately win you over, but I'll give it a whirl regardless and see what you think. My favorite bet on the board right now, the Cleveland Browns minus 1 hosting the Steelers. And I think last time we connected right before the season, I had also just placed some bets on the Browns. And you might think I'm way more of a Browns fan than I actually am. Not looking to make that happen or get myself overexposed on Cleveland. But I feel like the Browns this week make for the quintessential props and hops bet if there ever was one. And I say that for better or worse, given my record on sides on this show so far this season. But I feel like it's got probably the biggest consensus I can recall this season across a lot of pro and sharp bettors who I trust the most, starting with Rob Pizzola on Forward Progress, as well as Las Vegas Chris on the BetUS NFL show, Steve Fezzik on the BetUS NFL show, as well as the Dream Preview, Adam Chernoff of Right Angle Sports on his podcast, The Simple Handicap, Cleve TA on the Megapod, and last but not least, Payne on the Bet the Board podcast. A lot of people I really respect looking at this game from a similar point of view. And some of the highlights from the handicap would start with, from my perspective, the notion that two things that seem contradictory can be true at the same time. Number one, Mike Tomlin and the Steelers absolutely have to be doing some things that are really tough to quantify, but do matter significantly. And I don't think it's random at this point that the Steelers' one-loss record is better than their stats. But number two, to counter that, I would say that Pittsburgh, not as good as the 6-3 record would tell you. They've been outgained in all 9 games so far this season. Yards per play, success rate, EPA, a lot of predictive metrics all paint a pretty bad light on the Steelers. And when we look at things like turnovers, which are not so predictive, but very impactful to the outcome of any one game, those have strongly favored Pittsburgh so far this season. Looking at the Browns a bit, I know it's back to DTR at quarterback, and his first start was an abject disaster against the Ravens. In that case, I think some context is warranted. He found out that he was going to be starting that game on pretty short notice, and the game plan had pretty much been crafted for Deshaun Watson. So this time, no surprise, a game plan tailored to Robinson. And I also think the Pittsburgh defense represents a step down in class from what he faced against Baltimore the first time around. I'm looking at this as maybe a free roll that he's improved since then and can be at least as serviceable as PJ Walker showed with Cleveland this season. I think that Kevin Stefanski and that Brown staff have to know a good bit more than we do. So there should be a reason they're turning to DTR. We'll see on Sunday. Last but not least, with this handicap on the other side of the ball, the Cleveland defense should really have a firm upper hand against the Steelers offense. Cleveland held Pittsburgh's offense to negative yardage in the fourth quarter in the first matchup this season. And I'm pretty much betting against the same major swings and variants that favored the Steelers in that first matchup from happening again this time around. So Clark, all in all, I'm on the Browns minus one alongside plenty of other bettors who are well known in this space. What do you think of that look?
I think it's the right side. I was looking at the Browns before the Deshaun Watson injury anyway. I don't have enough confidence in who DTR is to make the bet. And that's one of the things that I also am focusing on this year is when there is uncertainty that I think where the range of outcomes of the uncertainty favors both sides, you know, in a large amount of instances, I just kind of lay off. And that's kind of how I feel about this is the Browns should win if DTR is not terrible. They're the better team overall. And I agree with all of your points. But it's so hard to win outright with a bad quarterback in the NFL. And if DTR is a bad quarterback, then this isn't a game that I want to be a part of. So pass for me.
All right. We'll see if we can find any common ground when it comes to teasers on the week 11 slate. More to come on this topic later as well. But for now, we'll talk about some potential looks for your betting portfolio. Starting with that classic model, looking at games that we can take through 3-7 on an NFL two-team 6-point teaser, laying no more than minus 120. I'm seeing three fits on the board as we currently see it. Detroit minus 1.5 hosting Chicago, and then both primetime games to wrap up the week. Sunday night, Minnesota able to be taken up to plus 8.5 at Denver. And then on Monday night, Philadelphia up to plus 8.5 at Kansas City in the Super Bowl rematch. Clark, among those three options or anything else, maybe getting a little bit creative with teasers this week, does anything stand out to you as a potential teaser play for week 11?
Out of the three of those, I think my favorite leg would be the Eagles taking up to plus 8.5. You know, this is potential weather game with a team that is so consistent on offense. Their offense performances have almost been, you know, disregarding the quality of the defense with the exception of the Jets game. But in that Jets game, Lane Johnson also got hurt. So outside of the Lane Johnson injury game, the Eagles offense has just been so consistent. So even though I kind of lean on the Chiefs in that game, you know, under the three and on the money line, I think it's going to be a tight game. It's going to be a game where if the Chiefs build a lead, the Eagles should be able to come back from behind, and getting the 8.5 is really solid. But I would actually pair it with the Bills. They're currently 7-point favorites. I expect that to maybe close 7.5. So you're kind of getting that half point of value before the move. But even if it closes 7, I don't mind going 7-1 on a teaser leg with a team that I have a high confidence. I have high confidence in them winning outright, which is going to seem silly because I teased them last week with basically the same number against them. Actually, it was the same number because I teased them at 7 early on in the week. And they lost outright. And that was very frustrating. But this is a Bills team that is just better than its record. And I believe in the talent. I believe that they are far superior to the Jets. And if Josh Allen and the offense can just do anything, then it's going to be enough to beat Zach Wilson, who behind a struggling offensive line just hasn't been able to muster up any offense. So the Bills are at home. You know, I don't care about all the, you know, they're not playing well. They have all this dysfunction. They fired the roster coordinator. I don't care about any of that. I like taking the better team that I think has a very high chance of winning outright.
All right. So Clark, giving a look to the Eagles plus 8.5 at Kansas City paired with Buffalo minus 1 hosting the Jets. And I'm kind of glad you brought up those two picks because I didn't go with either of those in my teaser selection this week, but I like when we can bring a diversity of thought to this show. So it's not just one of those echo chambers of people agreeing with one another, like so many shows across the sports gambling content landscape. For me this week, it started with the process of elimination. Not a big process considering only three games fit the model. And I did consider Buffalo or some teams maybe getting a bit outside the box. ultimately, I did hone in on the three options that we touched on earlier. And the one I knocked off was the Eagles, in part because Kansas City is shaded toward the three at some sharper books. And I do like them at less than the three. So I don't want to necessarily tease the Eagles if I actively like the other team at the current point spread. So that would leave me with a best bet of Detroit -1.5 hosting Chicago and Minnesota +8.5 at Denver. And Clark, I'm already guessing you might be quick to flag that the Detroit-Chicago game could see a good bit of variance, which we don't typically want in a teaser, considering Justin Fields is making his return. So that Lions-Bears game could be a potential landmine, and I do respect that dynamic, so that is keeping this bet size in check. But I'm willing to pay to see it to believe it with Chicago. Ultimately, kind of like your Buffalo handicap, I view Detroit as the superior team by a good margin at home, needing to do a little more than win outright. And in the second leg, with the Vikings, I feel like Minnesota is kind of like Chargers North. They just play so many close games, and they don't always win them, but they often play teams tight. And Denver seems like a team that's on the upswing, but I don't see them as being very well equipped to blow out another competent team in the league. So I like Detroit and Minnesota in my teaser this week. I have one more 6.5 pointer that I'll get to as a little bonus, but Clark, any thoughts initially on that Lions-Vikings NFC North teaser for week 11?
I think it's a good look. Yeah, even with the variance on both games, really, because I mean, I think Dobbs still creates a little bit of variance for the Vikings. I think the variance doesn't really favor, like, Josh Dobbs playing so poorly that they get blown out is a very low percentage outcome, and Justin Fields playing so well that they beat the Lions outright in Detroit is also a very low percentage outcome. So it's not the type of, like, the variance in that game is Justin Fields' hand isn't right. And, you know, he can't throw the ball, he gets benched, whatever. Like, Lions blowout is the variance, in my opinion. So I like that teaser. I think it's a good look.
All right, we'll see if I can go 2 for 2 winning you over with teaser looks on this week 11 slate. Looking at a 6.5 pointer, consider that good up to -130. I'm also in play on Washington down to -2.5 hosting the Giants, paired with the Rams up to +7.5 hosting Seattle. And with Washington, once again, superior team at home, needing to do a little more than win outright. Basically, I don't love Washington as a massive favorite, but if I can just essentially ask them to beat Tommy DeVito, then that's kind of tough to pass on. And it does take 2 to tango with a teaser, so not just banking on Washington. I think I like the Rams leg even better in this equation. And there's a little bit of a dynamic, as much as I don't get too familiar with narratives. This game of rock, paper, scissors in the NFC West, it seems like the Rams always match up well with Seattle. Seattle matches up well with San Francisco, and then San Francisco matches up well with the Rams. In this case, we are drawing that Rams-Seahawks game that tends to favor the Rams. And also, this line, last I checked, was pick 'em at Bookmaker, which is one of the sharpest books in the world. So basically getting 7.5 points for the price of 6.5 points, crossing through the key number, representing a 1 touchdown margin of victory that we could possibly see. Clark, any interest on Washington -2.5 hosting the Giants and the Rams +7.5 hosting Seattle in a 6.5 point teaser this week?
Not interest for me, but I'm not going to poke holes in it. I think Stafford's hand is a little bit of a question mark for, you know, if something happens that could really go south, especially with the Seattle defense playing better since they acquired Leonard Williams. So yeah, I think, and the Giants Washington game is a really fun one. I'm kind of like, I haven't played anything on it, but I'm looking for ways to kind of bet on DeVito, which might sound weird. We'll get to it when we talk about props. So I'll say it's probably not a terrible bet. I'm not on it myself.
All right, well, let's do it. Let's get into props and tell me where you're looking with DeVito this week.
Yeah, so over 160 passing yards for Tommy DeVito. This is a double-sided handicap. The first is that Washington's pass defense is terrible. They've allowed pretty much every quarterback they've faced since week one to throw for, you know, close to 300 yards, if not over 300 yards. The only exception is Mac Jones threw for, I think, 220-ish against them. And that was before they lost most of those games, before they lost their two best pass rushers, two of their three best pass rushers in Chase Young and Montez Sweat. This is a vulnerable secondary that everybody has torched, and now they can't get a pass rush. So you got Tommy DeVito going from, you know, game one enters in against the Jets, who are a ferocious defensive front and just completely shut them down. Game two against the Raiders, you know, not a great game. Fair enough, whatever. But game three was against the Cowboys, another really ferocious pass rush. And on the first drive, they started the ball. They started with the ball on the 1 yard line after the Dallas Cowboys failed on a fourth and one from the goal line. And then the second drive, they started on the 5 yard line. And so by the time the game really got going, it was like two drives had been wasted. The whole 15 plays had been, you know, scrapped because of game, you know, field position. And I really feel like that he never really got a chance to get going. And he showed that he can throw the ball. Like he's an NFL quarterback. Like, I know that we want to treat him like he's, you know, some scrub that they picked up off the streets, but he's an NFL quarterback. And so 160 yards in a game against a really bad defense where, you know, Brian Daboll has all week to prepare him in a game script that's either going to be, you know, a back and forth battle, in which case, great, or, you know, a big Washington win, in which case, you know, they've shown that they're going to keep throwing late. So this is just a very, very low line that's saying, we know for sure that he's really, really, really bad. And I think there are plenty of outcomes where he puts up over 160 yards.
And you've got some agreement in our chat on YouTube, Dan Rivera noting somehow the Commanders have lucked out against the last two quarterbacks, not being able to largely take advantage of the bad defense. DeVito doesn't have to take advantage much to clear the low number of 160 and a half. So I hear you on that one. And I'm going to look toward a quarterback passing yard prop as well. This one, I'll look to the under. And I feel like I might get some resistance from you on this one. So I will say that it came to me courtesy of Hitman earlier today on Forward Progress. So I'll let you go toe-to-toe with Hitman if you want to push back on a prop. This would be Josh Allen passing yards under. And the number has come down a bit. It's a current consensus of 241 and a half. And Hitman noted when he referenced this on Forward Progress that anything in the mid 240s was still good. At the time, there were some 244 and a half. So those have been wiped out. Those got wiped out within minutes of his mention, as one might expect. But I think while some of that wiggle room has largely evaporated, this one to me still seems good for a reduced bet, let's say, as long as we can keep 240 as a win number. So considering it good to 240 and a half at a flat minus 115. And while Hitman didn't really detail the handicap, a couple of initial thoughts I had. One, we talked about this before the show. I know it's a small sample size, but the Jets, no stranger to giving Josh Allen trouble with their defense. And because that's not a big sample size, another thought that I had that gave me the confidence to go ahead and pull the trigger here. The Bills recently fired offensive coordinator Ken Dorsey, and that seemed like a pretty big scapegoat move as far as I've heard from people who I respect and seem to understand this a lot better than I do. It seems like the Bills offense and specifically Dorsey, that wasn't the problem. And now Sean McDermott having more of a say in the Bills offense might turn into a negative for Josh Allen's output. So what's your point of view, Clark, for a potential look at Allen under 241 and a half pass yards this Sunday against the Jets?
Well, I'm definitely not going to go head to head with Zuma on a side and head to head with Hitman on a prop on the same show. So I'm certainly with you and with Hitman. Also, independently, I mean, I like the bet. Like the Jets defense really does cause Josh Allen problems. My belief that the Bills have a high percentage chance to win the game outright does not rely on Josh Allen throwing for a lot of yards. This is a game where I think the Jets offense is really going to struggle on the road in Buffalo. I think they can win comfortably, and Josh Allen can still throw for 200, 220 yards easily.
All right. Well, if you're not going to go head to head with Zuma and Hitman on the same show, I totally get it. Having respect for sharp betting sources can go a really long way in this whole endeavor. And I will use that as a shameless plug transitioning to my weekly promo for my partnership with Right Angle Sports this season in an affiliate capacity. And I always think of it through the lens of betting being really fun. But as you and I can attest, especially with sides this season, winning's really tough. And the value proposition I try to bring with this show is highlighting the best information from the sharpest sources. And with its team of pro sports bettors, Right Angle Sports has built a reputation as a gold standard for picks. They've got something for everybody right now across the NFL, also their flagship college basketball service with that season having tipped off recently. So if you're interested in trying their pick service, you can support Props and Hops by supporting Right Angle Sports. I've built a custom link, tinyurl.com/RASPicks, where you can see more info. If you're with us on YouTube or in podcast form, that link is in the show notes, and on Twitter, that link is in the show's bio. So, Clark, with all that said, we can get to a rapid fire rundown of our picks for this week. Let's dub it the Props and Hops Week 11 portfolio. As far as sides go, Clark on Green Bay +3 hosting the Chargers. But if you're seeing a flat -110, hold off. You may well be able to get even money, if not a bit of a juicy +3.5 between now and kickoff. I am going to go ahead and endorse Cleveland minus one hosting Pittsburgh. As far as teasers go, Clark looking at Buffalo minus one hosting the Jets paired with the Eagles plus 8.5 at Kansas City and the Super Bowl rematch on Monday night. And I am looking to go with the Lions down to minus 1.5 hosting the Bears paired with Minnesota up to plus 8.5 at Denver. And as a little bonus here, a 6.5 point teaser, good up to minus 130. Washington minus 2.5 hosting the Giants paired with the Rams plus 7.5 hosting Seattle. And to round things out, of course, the props. Clark looking at Tommy DeVito over 160.5 passing yards. And I'm going with Josh Allen under 241.5 passing yards. All right, I'll take a breath. Now we'll move from the picks into the process. And Clark, we can go right back to teasers for that segment this week. And specifically talking teasers related to the importance of totals. The conventional wisdom in the space has been that lower totals are better for teasers. Basically, we get the same number of points in a teaser regardless of the total, and that same number of points can represent a higher percentage of a low total than a high total, essentially magnifying the relative value of each point. And this led to a pretty spirited Twitter exchange over the weekend. I think the impetus was me deciding to tease Rutgers in a rare college teaser up to plus 7.5 at Iowa. I can't name a player on either side. I just saw that we had a game with a historically low total of 27.5 and a chance to take the underdog up through a touchdown in a game lined really close to Pick'em. So sample size of one, but Rutgers fell flat on its face and lost 22-0. So that immediately went up in flames. Clark, one of the points that you brought up in the thread was a curiosity for some data to back the assumption that low totals are indeed better for teasers. And coming out of that, I was able to connect with two of my most trusted sources in the world when it comes to this topic, Rufus Peabody and our mutual friend, Las Vegas Chris. And when I connected with Rufus, he confirmed that from the way he's modeled it, lower totals do lead to lower variance and covering margin. So that does make them a little bit better for teasers. But he also clarified, not a huge impact, just that there is some impact based on what he's studied. That made perfect sense to me. I felt very validated, given that historically on this show, I have touted the value of low totals and teasers. And then, as you might guess, I hear from LVC, and he has data going back to 2015, which is about as big of a sample size as we could look for in the modern NFL era, with long teasers related to totals, and his results basically favored higher totals across the board, any way you wanted to slice it. So my takeaway, I guess if there was a podcast version of the shrug emoji, that would basically be it. Essentially, I think that I'll come away from this thinking that oversimplifying low totals being significantly better in props is a mistake that I don't want to make anymore. I think of my Chargers, for example. They play a ton of close games, but those are very often high scoring games. They can be a great teaser team. So like most things in life, when we talk totals, the truth can lie in the middle. My approach moving forward will be that the total's not a major factor. The bigger focus, thinking about the late, great David Malinsky, he would have a letter grade for confidence to go with his number grade assigned to each team. And I think when I have more confidence in a team, that will imply less variance. Totals be damned. That's how I'll look at teasers moving forward. Clark, I'll shut up and hand the mic over to you now. Based on the debate we had, some of the info I shared from LVC and Rufus Peabody, how would you describe your latest thoughts on totals as it relates to teasers?
All right. So let me start by saying that the data is definitely inconclusive. There's not enough sample size, right? Especially when you think about how the game has changed and evolved over the years. Like, a sample size from 2015 is probably about as meaningful a sample size as we can get in terms of modern day NFL football. But even then, things have changed in the last 3 years. Things have changed this year, right? This NFL season looks different than prior ones. And so I think you're not going to win me over with the data. I was just curious what the data said. And it's interesting that there are two conflicting sides of that. What I look at is more in my understanding of the game. And I'm gonna lose some people here, and I understand that. But I try to think of the game, and this is how I'm trying to build out my models, is I try to think of the game as I think of the world in terms of parallel universes created by everything that happens, right? So this is kind of quantum theory. You know, one event happens, either A or B, creates two separate universes where A happened and B happened. And we're just living in the universe where a million infinite things happen to lead us to this moment. And that's kind of how I think about football games, is they are not these holistic events where here's the total, here's the spread, and here are the range of outcomes. They are a series of events that happen one after the other. And so one way to illustrate this is the way defenses play versus different teams when playing with a lead, right? So you go in the second half and you're up by 14 and you're playing against Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. Your defense is going to play a lot of prevent, a lot of prevent big plays, force them to run the ball, force them to, you know, pass the ball for 5 or 6 yards. You're very unlikely to force the Chiefs to punt in that situation. It's much more likely going to be a long drive that ends in a touchdown. You're trying to shorten the game. You're trying to reduce the possessions and capitalize that way. But if you go into the second half and you're up by 14 against Zach Wilson and the Jets, you know, you might blitz the shit out of him. Like you might want to force mistakes and stop them. And that is more likely to lead to a, you know, a defensive masterclass in the second half against a, you know, when a quarterback that relies on the run game for his success is forced into one-dimensional passing attack, that's when a really good pass rush can tee off and capitalize. So the way that you play the game differs based on who you're playing. And one way that can impact this specific discussion is higher totals typically mean better offenses, and better offenses are more likely to be in a position where when playing from behind, they're more likely to get within that number of 8.5, 7.5 than a team that is behind and has a bad offense. It's much more likely to end the game closer to what the score is at that point, if not the team ahead extending their lead. So that's kind of my counter argument to the, you know, strictly mathematical range of outcomes argument. And that's kind of why I think the numbers are what they are, according to LVC since 2015.
All right. So I think we can agree. Historically, I have thought that lower totals were definitely more favorable, and you've kind of looked at it from a counterintuitive, but very valid perspective. And I think that maybe it's meeting in the middle of it in the sense of, okay, high totals or low totals. There are a lot of other factors to consider, and just not making totals a primary factor of a teaser handicap, probably the more optimal way to go in the long run.
Yeah. Shake hands on that.
All right, there we go. We have settled the debate that definitely captured some of my attention. It was a welcome diversion taking place in real time as USC was losing another football game up in Eugene, Oregon. So didn't mind having a nice diversion there and fueling some thought that can hopefully benefit the NFL betting ROI moving forward. Clark, I'd like to, at this point, weave the Malinsky Minute into this show. And originally, I was thinking that we could highlight Celebration Ale, one of Dave's favorite beers, and, you know, talk about that in this segment. We'll get there. The hops are coming. But for now, thinking Malinsky Minute, let's audible to something even better. Because, well, Dave, I like to think that he liked me quite a bit. I know that he loved my wife, Allison. And that would be the proper pecking order in the relationship I've got with my wife. She just, you know, was somebody that he adored, and for good reason. And I say this because last Saturday on Twitter, you shared a post. My wife and I have a tradition during the NFL season that I cannot recommend more highly. Every Saturday is her day. She gets whatever she wants, and we do whatever she wants. No distractions. It's my favorite day of the week. And that kind of stopped me in my tracks when I saw it. So, Clark, first and foremost, how did you two come up with the idea to make Saturday her day?
I don't know. We have all these silly things that we do, and they become traditions, you know, like stupid shit, like we have to make the bed together. Like if one person makes the bed on their own, they're like betraying the other person. So it's like, we have to do it together. And so this is just one of those things that we did one time. I think last year we started it. It was called Claw on Saturday. And she was just like, that we got to do this every week. I'm like, yeah, I love it. And so one thing that I think people don't understand about that tweet is so many people were commenting things like, I had to negotiate this, or like, you know, I do whatever she wants or something. It's like, that day is really good for me. Like she loves me as well. So she makes us do things that I like as well. She gets me desserts. We go hiking together. We go to breweries. We go, you know, we play board games. She doesn't even like board games, but it's all about spending quality time together. And so like we look after each other. And I think just that day that's just focused on stuff that is not, you know, she's very work oriented, and I'm obviously very focused on betting. I also have a regular job. It's a day where we both focus on each other and nothing else. And, you know, it helps that we don't have kids. I understand it's a lot harder to do when you have to manage kids. But it's just been such an amazing reminder of what's most important in my life, right? Everything else is ancillary to the relationships in my life. And my number one relationship is that with my wife. And so every Saturday I get that reminder. It doesn't matter what happens the next day on football day. I still have, you know, Claw on Saturday every week. And it's my highlight.
I think if Dave were still with us and could hear exactly what you just said, he would just give it a hearty, well played. And that seems like such a great way to make sure to take time for more important things in life each and every Saturday during the football season. And Clark, one more question for you on this topic. While it's her day, I know you said that you get plenty out of it as well. What would you say is one thing that you've gotten out of it that has surprised you since you started making Saturdays her day?
That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, everything surprises me in a way. Like, I'm always surprised by how much she cares about what I do. Like, she doesn't watch football. She doesn't care about football. But the way that she shows interest, because a lot of Clone Saturdays, us having conversations, right? It's about spending time together. The way that she shows interest in what I'm doing and, like, you know, my approach to betting and, like, how I think about football. Like, she listens to stories about players and, you know, angles and games that I see and why I'm betting something. And she, like, doesn't even have to feign interest. I think that's what surprises me, is, like, she's interested not because she likes football, but because she knows that it interests me. And so I think that's probably been the most surprising thing, is the level of conversations she's willing to have about topics that otherwise aren't interesting to her.
I love this. And I feel like there's a parallel too from a betting standpoint. I think of curation as my form of creation. I do not claim to be a pro bettor or an originator, but over time it has served me well, trying to identify the best sources to copy in my own right. And I'll just say, I do that through the lens of imitation being the highest form of flattery. That's not limited to betting, because Clark, I think I'm going to copy this one from you. And now that USC is out of the running for anything interesting, we've got one more Caleb Williams game this weekend, then that's it for him. I think down the second half of the NFL season, down the stretch, it's definitely going to be a similar dynamic in my relationship. So my wife thanks you in advance for sharing this with us.
I will say, you're the fourth person now to say that, and the other three have all had glowing reviews from both partners. So, you know, again, cannot recommend it highly enough.
All right, so the Browns may go down in flames. The teasers may go down in flames. Josh Allen might pass for 400 yards this weekend. But if you're listening to this conversation, one guaranteed plus EV move just came out of the Malinsky Minute, whether you've got a significant other or just a friend, anybody in your life. If you want to make it your own day to do anything but sports betting, just finding more important things of life beyond the betting boards can go such a long way. And I'll say that one of those non-betting aspects of life that I have clearly fallen in love with over the years would be the hops. So let's make that transition, Clark. Often in the past, when I've connected with you on this topic, you've mentioned some good local sour beers or perhaps some homemade cocktails. What have you been enjoying lately when it comes to the hoppier side of life?
So a few Saturdays ago for Claw on Saturday, one of the things we did was, I'm sure you're familiar with Avery Brewing in Colorado.
Yes.
I live in Denver. And so we went there and we had a meal and we got some beer and it was great. And I tried a beer there that I really liked, this Electric Sunshine fruited tart ale that I'm now currently drinking. And so on the way out, I bought some six packs of the beer. And so that's currently what I'm enjoying in this moment. And also most recently, the most recent beer that I bought.
Love it. All right. So Electric Sunshine by Avery. And I think one of their flagships is a beer by the name of White Rascal, if I'm not mistaken. That's also fairly light, a little on the tart side. So if that's up anybody's alley, keep an eye out for anything along those lines from Avery Brewing. And I am going to give a nod to an annual rite of passage. I mentioned it earlier. Celebration Ale by Sierra Nevada. I will hold up a can that I've got on hand. Really iconic packaging that stands out on the shelves this time of year. And this is a fresh hop IPA, clocked in at 6.8%, made by Sierra Nevada Brewing Company. And now there's a footprint from coast to coast. Sierra Nevada in its OG roots in Chico, California, also doing a lot of production out of Mills River, North Carolina. So pretty much anywhere in the country right now, you've got pretty good odds of finding Celebration Ale at a grocery store or bottle shop near you. And when I mentioned this is a fresh hop IPA, basically what that means is Sierra Nevada takes freshly picked hops from the most recent harvest season and rushes them from the farm to the brewery. And when we talk about freshly picked hops, these are the classic sea hops, as beer geeks call them. Cascade, Centennial, Chinook hops. Essentially, that means that classic citrus and pine combo that a lot of people think of when they think of a throwback West Coast IPA. An interesting wrinkle here with Celebration, it's got caramelized malt, and that gives the beer an amber appearance. And so that's pretty rare for an IPA. I mean, IPA stands for India Pale Ale. something amber in color, not exactly pale, but it gets the job done. It adds to the mystique of a beer that's only available during the season. And Clark, I will crack open this can. I held off on opening it because the sound effect is just too good for a podcast. And as I do that, I will pass it back to you to see if there is anything food or drink wise that stands out in your mind as an annual rite of passage for the holidays.
You know, we're not big on traditions, maybe because, you know, my family wasn't big on traditions, neither was hers. But one thing we did was not a tradition, but one year, the COVID year, when we couldn't travel and all that kind of stuff, we, for Thanksgiving, we picked up a bunch of crab's legs and just had like a feast for Thanksgiving with just the two of us. And that was probably my favorite Thanksgiving. Like, I'm not a big, you know, turkey and cranberry and stuffing kind of guy. Like, I just really like things that taste really good. And that was perfect for me. So I think we do need to implement some more traditions, but I think going back to the crab legs, maybe like every 5 years or so, is going to be a thing for us.
Oh, that sounds awesome. Yeah. I love finding traditions with somebody that it doesn't have to be something you were necessarily raised on. It's great if this, some of your people have something that's just comforting and nostalgic, by all means, if that improves the quality of your life, go to town with it. But there's also something special of just kind of random one-off experiences. I mean, my wife and I recently started a tradition, again, similar to you. We don't have kids, so we have a bit more free rein with our discretionary time and money. But every year on Christmas Eve, we take a trip up to Yosemite. It's about a four-hour drive from our house in LA. And there's a diner that we stop at just outside of Fresno called Apple Annie's. And it's good. It's not going to, you know, win any Michelin stars anytime soon, but it's just such good comfort food. I think Tulare, California is like a farm town where the spot's located, almost like a halfway stop. We know every year, almost to the hour, Christmas Eve, when we're leaving the house, when we're stopping at Apple Annie's, when we're getting to our lodge in Yosemite, what we're doing Christmas Day in the national park, on our way home on the 26th, a second go at Apple Annie's, and just little things like that you can create with somebody else. Again, family traditions that people grow up on, that's awesome. But sometimes there's something really special as well about maybe a little bit later on in life, just starting something new with somebody who you didn't grow up with and just giving it a life of its own.
Yeah, totally agreed. I think this year we talked about doing like 12 days of Christmas, not 12 days. I think we're going to do like 6 days of Christmas, where we just do a little something every day for like 6 days, just, you know, something as small as like make some wassail and have like a movie night or something. And that's going to be our new tradition starting this year. So I'm looking forward to that implementation.
I like it. And one more note, but then, you know, we won't belabor the point. I know this is not a relationship podcast, but as you've thrown a few of these thoughts out there, it reminds me that one of the best ideas my wife has had in our relationship a few years ago, she came up with the thought of, hey, let's do something new every month. One thing we haven't done before. And it can be something new in terms of traveling across the world to a country we've never been to and having an awesome vacation. Or it can be something that we can walk to from our house, or maybe something that's in our house that we just haven't, you know, experienced. Like there's nothing too big or small. It doesn't require traveling a certain distance or spending a certain amount of money. But just keeping things fresh in a way, it has a really nice way of keeping things from getting too mundane. I know in the NFL season, it's like rinse and repeat week after week. And in relationships and in work, things can follow a similar cycle. But just a way to keep things fresh can go such a long way. And I can be so routine oriented and sometimes maybe a little bit robotic to a fault with things. But little things to try to spark a little bit of novelty can go such a long way over the course of time.
I love that. I love that. Thanks, Matt.
Feel free to copy it, because I know I will be copying your idea about making Saturday the day your wife's preferences in the spotlight. And on that note, we'll start around the corner here. One quick ask for those of you who are still with us. If you're still tuned in, a really good indication that you're liking the show. If you're with us on YouTube, if you could take a quick moment to like this video. If you're with us on Twitter live, if you could take a moment to like this post. And for those of you in podcast form, would also appreciate it if you could take 5 seconds to leave a 5-star review. A 5-star rating. Feel free to write a review as well if you'd like, but a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify would be greatly appreciated. Last but not least, however you're listening, a friendly reminder that you can support this show by supporting Right Angle Sports. No obligation whatsoever, but if you're interested, the custom link is tinyurl.com/raspicks. On YouTube and in podcast form, that link is in the show notes, and on Twitter, that link is in the bio. Clark, I think I just saw a reaction from you to indicate that the Ravens might have done something well as the Thursday night game ends nears the end of the third quarter.
Just a field goal, which matters for me because I have a an alt spread on Ravens minus 13 and a half. So now they're up by 14. They just got to play some defense.
All right. A 2-touchdown lead heading into the fourth. We will let you get to it and see how this end game plays out. As we wrap things up here, I want to remind everybody one more time, you can follow Clark's work at 4 for 4 on the Move the Line podcast, as well as on Forward Progress every Tuesday with G-Stack George, his website, sharpclark.com, and of course on Twitter at sharpclarknfl. Again, there's an E at the end of Clark. Clark, these conversations are always such a blast. I knew that you'd bring it with the betting insight, but everything beyond betting was equally enjoyable. Thank you so much for the time and insight.
Yep. Thank you for what I think I'm ready to call a friendship over these series of conversations. It means a lot to me. Thanks, Matt.
Absolutely. Love sharing a beer virtually, talking betting, talking a lot about life beyond the betting boards as well. So that'll be a proper note to tie a bow around this conversation. Also want to thank those of you for watching and listening. Really appreciate the time. And a quick programming note. Next week, planning to go live on Wednesday ahead of Thanksgiving in the U.S. And it'll be take two at welcoming back Fabian Sommer. So we'll see what comes of that Chargers-Packers game. Who's going to have bragging rights between Clark and Zuma? Charting to go live next Wednesday at 3:15 p.m. Eastern, 12:15 Pacific. And I will confirm those details by Tuesday on the show's Twitter handle at Props and Hops Pod. In the meantime, everybody, I think if you're watching us live, you might have just gotten a glimpse of Clark's cat. Kitten may have just made an appearance. So feel free to tune in and catch us in video form if you want a little bit of extra scenery during these episodes. But otherwise, that will do it for this episode of Props and Hops. Enjoy week 11 in the NFL, and best of luck with your bets this weekend.